We're joined now by Luke Stoddard Nathan, editor of the Weekly Troy Letter. What's going on, Luke?
Hey, thanks for having me. Good to be here despite the inclement weather. I left extra early today to get here. Last week, at a regular city council meeting, this was the first city council meeting following the resignation of Mark McGrath, who I think people are probably familiar by now. He resigned after a 3-year-old voicemail in which he uses racial slurs was described in an article by the Times Union. He didn't resign immediately, but you know he eventually did. And so now there is this question hanging over the council. You know, is who is going to fill who is going to fill his seat, and how is that person going to make it into that seat? The sort of the first person to make an attempt at putting or at trying to fill that seat was the council president, Carmela Mantello, who is a Republican, one of only two now left on the council. She had put forward an emergency resolution just a day before the council meeting on last Thursday, that would have created a special committee that would have been made up of one council member from the minority, that is the Republicans, one council member from the majority, which is the Democrats, and then five members of District 2, which is, you know, we're within it right now up at the Sanctuary for Independent Media, but it's roughly corresponds to like the North Central neighborhood of Troy. And then that committee would have made recommendations to the council as to who should fill Mark McGrath's position for the remainder of his term until there's a real, an election this fall. The reason why I call it an emergency resolution is because ordinarily when the city council considers a resolution or a legislation, it has to be approved by the committee at least 2 weeks before it's then considered by the regular meeting. It gives time. It's kind of lets it make sure that I don't know exactly the intent of the law. I mean, that sort of rule of the council, but I'd imagine it's so that there's sort of time to digest what's being proposed and consider it and make sure nothing's rushed into action. But if you invoke an emergency, basically, which can be determined by the president of the council, that is Carmela Mantello, then you can circumvent that. So she was prepared to do that, but then at the outset of the meeting on Thursday, she basically relented and said that, kind of cryptically, that after speaking with Reverend Charles Burks and also just receiving an email from other sort of other unnamed people, she decided to pull it and recognizing, I guess, that maybe there wasn't support in the community for this approach or and maybe also a recognition that the Democrats were not going to go for mm-hmm. that option either.
It did seem a little unilateral.
Yeah, because I think, well, you know, ostensibly, right, you might say, well, you know, this would get more people involved. It would make sure that, you know, that because let me back up the Democrats, because they're 4-2, this seat can be filled by the council simply vote. Mm-hmm. A majority vote would they could name whoever they want, provided that this person meets the whatever criteria you probably lives in the district,
right.
Is of a certain age, So I think that the Democrats are probably wary of giving up that power, and we take Mantello at her word that she thought that this would be a good way for residents of District 2 to express their ideas and whatever. I would point out though that. She did not, when the Times Union at least first approached her for her reaction to when the voicemail was reported by the Times Union, she didn't call for Mark McGrath's resignation, unlike, at least some members of the Democrats, so just for, I don't know, make it that way.
Well,
you will.
She's still recovering from her own minor scandal,
yeah,
so maybe just keeping her head down was
yeah,
the best option.
I mean, yeah, that's worth pointing out as well. In any case, you know, she sort of questioned Councilmember David Bessemer about, you know, what are you going to do? What's the process going to be? And it seems like the Democrats just want to have a sort of a simpler process where basically they're encouraging people to send their resumes and, you know, a cover letter to the clerk's office. And then they're going to review resumes and eventually make an appointment eminently, as far as I know. And then it will be interesting to see whether they whether they pick someone who's just going to fill that role until the end of the term, you know, through the remainder of the year, or whether they're what I would imagine they would do is pick someone who then they would also have run again to serve the same in the same position. So I guess we'll see. Also, what came to light during this meeting, I thought this was interesting, and this only came out later in the meeting. Democratic Councilmember Colleen Parator, she said that had McGrath not resigned, the council majority was prepared to, quote, force him out. They were looking into whatever sort of parliamentary maneuver is required for them to be able to get him off the council if he didn't go into the night. You know, whether he knew that and, you know, that just kind of influenced, hastened his exit, you know, I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised. And she also said that the majority wants to appoint a person of color to that empty seat. About a third of District 2 is African American, so you know that, I think that they seemed, especially in recognition of, you know, the person who previously filled that seat and how, you know, that language, you know, was hurtful and racist. I think that they saw you know that is an important thing to say and to consider as they, you know, look into filling that seat. After the meeting, there was also a pretty vigorous public comment period. A bunch of speakers spoke, and I think actually later in this program you're going to hear some audio of from that meeting. So I won't belabor it too much, but just wanted to go over a couple of things. Multiple members of the group Justice for Demeek spoke. That was a group that was formed in the aftermath of the non-fatal police shooting of Demeek McDonald, not far from here. He's since sued the city in federal court. That lawsuit's ongoing. Messiah Cooper, who is McDonald's uncle, he didn't really address police reforms as much as he talked about the park at 7th and Engels, again, not far from here, really popular park, especially in the summertime. The city has committed to making a whole host of improvements to that park. I think I've talked about it on this show before, but just briefly, it involves like redoing the basketball courts. The Uncle Sam bike trail also is adjacent to that park, but there's no obvious connection to it. So they want to have some sort of linkage between the park and the bike path, a pavilion, bathrooms, et cetera, et cetera. Messiah Cooper was basically like, you know, that should be done by now. We want to see that those improvements happen, you know, not tomorrow, you know, today, you know. And the deputy mayor actually stood up and started to kind of lay out where the city is on that. She said that the city intends to seek public input basically very soon and then solicit bids this summer for construction and then start construction in the fall. And also she said that they would proceed in stages so that the whole park is never closed down. So there's always at least some degree of access to the park you know, for the whole duration of construction. Actually a sidebar, the mayor in his State of the City address, which I'll talk about also on this show today, if we have time, had said that they were going to solicit bids early this year, not in the summer, but I don't, in any case, I guess this year, I guess we can say. Cooper was somewhat mollified to hear that from the deputy mayor, but he then went further and said that he'd really like the city to explore the creation of a community center in the North Central neighborhood. You know, he said the Boys and Girls Club is good, but not everybody can afford that. And, you know, he even pointed out that there's this former electronic supply building right next to the park that would make an ideal site. But whether that actually happens, I don't know, but this sort of seeks into the next speaker who I wanted to briefly mention, who is Anastasia Robertson, who is a former district to council member herself, former McGrath's very seat. And, you know, her comments even were pretty compelling, and they even drew applause at some moments from the city council members themselves. I'll read a little bit of a quote of what she said. You know, she sort of touched broadly on, like, the need for inclusivity, I guess, in city government, and how the city government reaches people, especially in the North Central neighborhood. She said, "It hurts to live somewhere where every time you walk into a meeting, the people that are representing me, none of them look like me. And none of them make an effort to reach out across or outside of the area that they're in to say, we need to be more inclusive. We need to be more diverse. We need to reach out to other folks." She then, earlier in the meeting, Councilmember Anasha Cummings pointed out that the Ingalls Avenue boat launch is going to be done very soon. This is a project that the city has tried to complete for a number of years, is finally looking like it will be completed very soon. This is right behind Bell and Napoli. It'll be a place to bring your boats in or whatever. And Robertson was like, at one point, kayaks are fun, but they don't do anything to help the homeless, to help the elderly, to help my neighbor whose house is falling down and can't find 2 cents to fix it. Again, sort of touching on a feeling that, like, the city's attention is sort of, you know, really kind of geared toward downtown, and, you know, what about the other neighborhoods in the city, and, you know, what are we doing in terms of investing in other neighborhoods that are not, you know, downtown,
not bringing in business directly, but instead focusing on the people who actually live there.
I mean the mayor, you know, and again, I'll talk about this in a moment, you know, the mayor talked about a lot about neighborhoods and the importance of neighborhoods and strong neighborhoods, not just downtown, at his city, at his State of the City address, you know, that very week. But, you know, I don't know that maybe that's perceived as just words, you know, maybe that they want to see, you know, more follow through than that. The one other speaker I wanted to mention briefly is Luz Marquez Benbow, who's also a member of Justice for Demique. And she just reiterated the group's now more than year-long call for the establishment of a civilian review board in the city, with that will have subpoena power. A civilian review board, basically like a panel of, you know, community members and maybe some city council members or whatever as well, who would review instances where people complained about their treatment at the hands of a police officer or law enforcement professional. And she also mentioned, and this was interesting, a part that the mayor didn't make a ton of news, I thought, at his State of the City address. But one thing that he did say that I found interesting, and I didn't know the specifics of, was that he has been meeting along with he met with the police chief Brian Owens and the African American Pastoral Alliance a series of meetings facilitated by someone from the Department of Justice federal agency, and to discuss sort of policing in the Collar City. And what they ended up producing is I'm reading now from the mayor's speech, a 6-point plan that includes monthly meetings between the alliance and the leadership of the police department, as well as the formation of a community relations board in which members of the community and police officers can meet to build trust and increase transparency. Marquez Benbow then went on to say that she thought that they really want to see that 6-point plan. And indeed, I asked the mayor's office, you know, what is the 6-point plan? Has it been released or what? I didn't hear back. You know, you get a flavor from that quote I just read of what it's about. And I think that community relations board sounds to me like it's not the sort of board with teeth that I think Justice for Demique is looking for. It's a little bit of a softer board. I'm not saying it couldn't serve a good purpose, you know, and, you know, promote dialogue between, you know, the North Central neighborhood or other neighborhoods and the police. But I'm not sure that it would go far enough to make, you know, advocates sort of satisfied, you know.
Right. I think this might be something that can only make like recommendations instead of like concrete, like subpoena type powers.
Right. Yeah. I'm not sure that it would check all the boxes, but nonetheless, you know, I'm interested to see whether that sort of 6-point plan actually moves forward and is enacted. And, you know, the first way that might happen is if it were made public. So I hope that it's actually made public and, you know, the public can take a look at it at some point soon. If we have time also, I'll just mention, briefly, the city council also, this is much lighter news, endorsed the city's grant application to the state Department of Environmental Conservation for state funds up to $100,000 to remove water chestnuts, which are a invasive species, despite the charming sounding name. At least I thought they sound that sounds good. Water chestnuts, who wouldn't like those?
They have a good PR department.
Yeah, yeah. From the Route 7 side of the Tomahanic Reservoir, that's where a lot of the city gets their water. Chris Whalen, the city's superintendent of public utilities, who's overseeing that project, said that water chestnuts don't affect the water quality, but they're nonetheless, an invasive species. If the city were to win the grant, it would have to kick in 25% local funds. The rest would be covered by the state. Anasha Cummings said that I found this funny, that he has some firsthand experience removing water chestnuts, and he said it's not an easy task and they have very sharp seeds. And I guess I'll just also mention that, in this year's budget, the city does not have a full-time grant writer. And the sort of plan is, at least as it was discussed during the budget negotiations or deliberations, was that the city was going to kind of contract out help for grant writing on a case by case basis. But I guess, I would imagine people can take heart in seeing that the city is still, early in the year, going out and trying to get grants for various things. I feel like this isn't the first one even that I've seen on the city council agenda this year. That seems like a promising sign. If you were worried before now that the pursuit of grants, which is obviously a very important thing for running a city government, because a lot of state money is tied up in grants and these sorts of things, that the city's still going out and pursuing these things. So.
And so they do have a little bit more money coming on, a little time, but could you tell us very quickly about their bond approval they got?
Oh, yeah. The city just put out a big bonding package, basically borrowing money to the tune of almost $36 million for a whole variety of capital projects that have already been approved by the city council and already discussed by me on this show and in past Troy letters as well. But sometimes when you read the official statements, basically the documentation associated with these with these bond issuances, you can learn little newsy nuggets. And one thing that I found is that the city said in this bonding documentation that it is expecting the American Theater project, you remember, also known as the Cinema Arts Building, an adult theater that's right down on River Street, sort of right near Psychedelicatessen. It's really cool facade, but it's been empty for a long time, that it expects that project to begin this year, which surprised me because I haven't really heard anything about that. It's owned by Bonaccio Construction, a developer that owns a lot of property around the city. But I reached out to the city, to Bonaccio, to Empire State Development. I really don't know much more about it than that, but it's something I'm keenly keeping my eye on because a theater. What if if that happened and it really was a theater and not repurposed as office space, I think that'd be pretty interesting.
It would be. And where can people go to keep up to speed on that story?
tinyletter.com/Troy_letter, or just email me luke.s.nathan@gmail.com. I'll sign you up. Thank you both for having me so much.
We look forward to seeing you.
Yeah.